Well, good afternoon. And this is the extended or additional meeting for the University Senate, May 25th, 2010. And first, I want to thank all the senators and steering committee members for their support and agreement that we have this additional meeting that you all supported. So we're very grateful for you taking time. Some of you had other engagements and commitments. I know that you saw the importance of having this meeting, so we're very grateful for that. The first item is informational item, and it's a calendar update. There had been some discussions at the last commencement that many faculty, some spoke to me, others wrote, and we made appropriate adjustments. And to share that is our registrar, Steve Chablin.
Good afternoon. As Dr. Mungill mentioned, for winter 2010, commencement was 2 days, Saturday, May 1st, and Sunday, May 2nd. And as Dr. Mungill mentioned, based on the collective feedback from faculty, staff, and students, the decision has been made to revert back to 1 day of commencement, effective with winter 2011 semesters and any future semesters thereafter. All three winter 2011 commencement ceremonies will take place on Saturday, April 30th, 2011. The 2010-11 academic calendar on the Office of the Registrar website has been updated to reflect this revision. Thank you.
One question was asked by some faculty, why didn't we make the change for fall 2010? The reason is that our office had already informed students, potential takers. And Stephanie, you want to make a comment about that, about not changing for the fall because you had already informed and had input from students,
right,
or graduates? Thank you. We move on to item number two. We have an update, which is a name change of a program that is in the catalog, but I think it was felt important the Senate be apprised. So with this, Charles Marks is in the audience.
Yes.
Charles, would you kindly mention that item?
Yes, Charles Marks, School of Health Sciences. Our program, Medical Laboratory Sciences, is now changing their program name to Biomedical Diagnostic and Therapeutic Sciences. The reason for the name change is that recently a couple of accreditation organizations have merged and come up with an accreditation called Medical Laboratory Scientist, and it was felt that that accreditation name would imply that the program was highly specialized in that area, so the program wanted to broaden its name for what it does do and also for future use.
Thank you. Susan, do you have any comment, if necessary, or it's not that? Okay, thank you. Item number B is a roll call. Dr. Joshi.
Susan Aubrey. Pete Bertocci. Keith Bourbon. Louie Shamra. Vivian Chen, Edith Chopin, here. Natalie Cole, here. Brian Connery, here. Mark Doman, here. Andrea Ice, here. Theo English, here. Bob Folberg, here. Donna Free, Frank Giblin, here. Annie Gilson, here. Kevin Grimm,
here.
Jerry Grossman,
here.
Layla Gassous, Derek Hastings, Ken Hightower, Jeff Insko, here. Odette Israeli, Francis Jackson,
present.
Bill Keen,
yeah.
John Kim,
here.
Serge Kruk, Tim Larrabee, Mike Latcha,
here.
Todd Leibert,
present.
Tom Lamarbe, Barbara Mabee,
here.
Charles Marks, Mark Meadow,
here.
Jay Meehan,
here.
Fatma Millie, Karen Miller,
here.
Ken Mitten, Sean Moran, Diane Norris. Annette Osborne.
Here.
Tom Pedroni. Michelle Piskulich.
Here.
Mike Polis.
Here.
Joel Russell.
Here.
Laura Sharpman.
Here.
Linda Schweitzer.
Here.
Michelle Southward.
Here.
Anna Spagnolo.
Here.
Ron Sudol.
Here.
Ann Switzer. Mohan Tanaru, he is here today. Emily Tiso. Ron Tracy.
Here.
Julie Volk.
Here.
Julie Walters.
Here.
And Karen Wells.
Here.
Thanks.
Thank you. Item number C, which was an approval of minutes, will be postponed for the fall 2010 meeting because of the tradition of the Senate. We will take up as advised by our parliamentarian. So we have old business. A new business should not come at this extended meeting. And the first item is a motion from Oakland University William Bowman School of Medicine to approve a new constitution. And Senator Osborne, would you kindly make the motion?
Move that the Senate recommend to the President and the Board of Trustees approval of the new constitution of the Oakland University William Beaumont School of Medicine.
Thank you. This is the second reading. It was presented earlier with a number of discussion and suggestions, and I invite Dr. Dean Bob Folberg to present the item. Bob.
Well, thank you all very much. I'd like to present what happened after the first reading of this Constitution before the Senate. And I'd like to express gratitude to the members of the Senate for many suggestions that they offered to us. And I especially want to express gratitude to members of the Steering Committee, who collectively and individually contributed many suggestions to which we considered and responded. And I'd like to inform the Senate that after we received these suggestions, we developed an inclusionary process to respond to these suggestions and incorporate these suggestions into a revision of the Constitution. I'll describe that process for you in a moment. Then we rewrote sections of the Constitution according to the suggestions that were offered to us. Finally, we subjected to our own School of Medicine faculty the revised Constitution for ratification. So let me go through with you all of these steps. The process that we sought was really to engage members of the Senate, members of the campus at large, and especially members of the Steering Committee for suggestions on how to improve the Constitution. We then formed an ad hoc committee on the School of Medicine Constitution made of School of Medicine faculty members. I'd like to acknowledge Dr. Mary B., who is in the audience today, who chaired this committee, Dr. Rick Sabina, who had to be away today on family business in Houston, Dr. Mitchell Capel from the Department of Internal Medicine, and Dr. George Williams, chair of the Department of Ophthalmology in the School of Medicine, who has had a long-standing affiliation with Oakland University through his collaborations with the Eye Research Institute and a comprehensive knowledge of Oakland University's processes and culture. This committee then looked at the suggestions that were offered to us from the campus and reformulated the Constitution. I would like to walk you through now, through the set of slides, the key revisions that were made to the Constitution by the committee. The first suggestion that was made to us is, please clearly define whom we mean by School of Medicine faculty. So I will go through this with you in detail. This is the revised language now, that the term faculty refers to all individuals with the following academic titles who hold primary appointments in the School of Medicine, and then these are listed. The next suggestion for us is to please clearly define how the School of Medicine is organized, and we revise the language of the Constitution to read the following, that the School of Medicine is organized into the Department of Biomedical Science, and the departments established by the School of Medicine's affiliates that deliver clinical education and care. As a matter of commentary, there is only one clinical affiliate at that time, that's Beaumont Hospitals. So those departments become the clinical departments of the School of Medicine. The next suggestion is, in the Constitution, please state clearly those standing committees that exist in the School of Medicine. and these are now clearly listed in the Constitution. Please note that we have formulated a committee on committees. This was formed specifically to permit the election of members from the School of Medicine's faculty assembly to the various committees assigned. So this becomes a nomination process for the election of committees. This became an item that was suggested to us throughout campus. Would we please clearly define to whom these committees report? And I'd like to read to you the revised language developed by the ad hoc committee, developed by faculty members in the School of Medicine for the revised constitution. Each committee shall report on its activities to the faculty assembly at least annually at one of the two regularly scheduled faculty assembly meetings. Committees should refer their recommended actions to appropriate associate and assistant deans by those procedures set forth in the School of Medicine's bylaws. All standing and ad hoc committees shall submit minutes and reports to both the faculty assembly and the executive committee of the faculty assembly. That's what's written. Now for a bit of commentary so that you understand why the language was incorporated this way as it was explained to me by the committee that drafted the revision. Please note that committees make recommendations for action for implementation. They refer their actions to appropriate associate and assistant deans. Let me explain to you why this happens. Example. In many other schools and in the college, promotion from one year to another is based upon the accumulation of credit hours. When one reaches a certain threshold of credit hours, one accrues standing at a higher level than before. This doesn't happen in a School of Medicine. Instead, the Student Promotions Review Committee has to certify that the students have completed each year of curriculum and have met certain standards. In addition, during the course of any academic year, disciplinary matters may come before the Student Promotions Review Committee. An example, minor example, for example, but one, suppose, for example, a medical student behaves inappropriately in a clinical setting. That requires a hearing, it requires due process, and we can't really wait for annual meetings to decide on what happens to a student. Recommendations need to be made immediately. In a most dramatic example, we hope we never encounter here at Oakland University what happened at Boston University last fall, where a medical student was accused of a very, very serious crime, and action had to be taken immediately. So the faculty decides on what to do, and then hands it off to appropriate personnel for implementation. What is the composition of the executive committee? So this is now clearly articulated in the Constitution. The executive committee of the faculty assembly shall initially be composed of 6 members who are elected by the faculty assembly. 3 members shall come from the Department of Biomedical Science. 3 shall come from the departments established by the School of Medicine's affiliates that deliver clinical education and care. This is a matter that we took very seriously, and this will be distributed over several slides, so let me walk you through this. How shall the School of Medicine be represented at this body, the Oakland University Senate? So let me take you through this. This is the revised language. The School of Medicine shall be represented at the University Senate by senators elected in accordance with the provisions of the Constitution of the Oakland University Senate. All faculty members listed in this article are eligible for election as senators. Now, what I have done here is listed for you the various people who are in these particular articles. We have professors, associate professors, and assistant professors. That's number 1. Number 2, the research professors down here. And number 3, the professors from the clinical disciplines. Now, I'm going to reproduce this on the various slides so that you can see what we are doing with representation and apportionment. They're 2 different issues. An equal proportion of the faculty from the Department of Biomedical Sciences and from the departments established by the School of Medicine's affiliates and care will be represented in the Senate. Now, how is it represented and how it's apportioned? This becomes important. The number of university senators elected to represent the School of Medicine will be determined by the formula to apportion Senate seats based on the number of School of Medicine faculty listed only in the first 2 categories, meaning that those people who have clinical appointments are not to be considered in the apportionment when determining how many seats are allotted to the School of Medicine in this body. and I hope that's very clear. We also provided language that if one took the Department of Biomedical Science, and it, let's say in the future it becomes extremely large, we inserted language that in no case will the number of senators assigned to the School of Medicine exceed the number of senators apportioned to the School of Business Administration, modeling ourselves after one of Oakland's other professional schools. So what steps did we take when we listened very carefully to the suggestions that you, the senators, others on campus, and especially members of the steering committee brought to us? We defined the process by which the faculty responded to the suggestions, and they rewrote the Constitution. Then finally, we submitted this amended Constitution for ratification. The rewritten Constitution was submitted for ratification in electronic balloting that was concluded last Friday, May 21st, and was ratified by the School of Medicine's Faculty Assembly. The last step, of course, is to present this revised Constitution to you at this meeting, the second reading. Again, the School of Medicine is very, very grateful to all of you, our campus colleagues, for your input, and we look forward to the discussion.
Thank you. The presentation is open for discussion.
I have some questions.
Yes, please, Dr. Jackson.
This is not a huge problem, but I think it sort of points up some of the issues about culture in the preamble. The Constitution addresses LCME, and the Constitution obviously addresses far more than that. That's not a huge issue, but it's just something that sort of points out some other problems. Under Article 2, 2C, you speak to review by the University Senate. There are a number of other bodies outside the Senate that have to approve and review programs. And so that language may not be as inclusive as it needs to be. I'm still very concerned about the fact that the Faculty Assembly of the School of Medicine does not appear to have any approval authority. And the fact that they meet twice a year does not, to me, appear to be sufficient for them to manage the School of Business, School of Medicine's business. None of the language in the Constitution tells me who gives approval. It talks about recommendations, and it talks about making reports. It does not say who approves anything. And based on the language, it would appear that committees are still essentially reporting to associate deans and assistant deans, and that these actions are not required to be approved by the Faculty Assembly of the School of Medicine. One way to correct this is that the Faculty Assembly of the School of Medicine could meet more than twice a year, and therefore one would not have to wait on a once a semester meeting in order to get certain things managed. And so this is a huge problem for me. This does not provide the School of Medicine faculty with the shared governance rights to control certain things as they should have. I'm also concerned that while the committees are listed, there's nothing here said about the numbers or any of the other things that we normally see with that. It also appears that only the dean of the School of Medicine can increase the number of meetings of the faculty assembly. So if the faculty want to meet more than once a semester, there's no vehicle by which they can do that. And I find that unacceptable. I also don't understand why the dean of the School of Medicine does not chair the faculty assembly. I just want to know, Joel, if you know the answer, tell me, but I want to know. Inquiring minds.
Dr. Folberg or Dr. Gillum, if you have any comments to respond.
Yes, in the Constitution, there are mechanisms stated by which the faculty and the executive committee can call meetings if they wish.
I'm sorry, if you could tell me where I could find that, I'd
You know, I don't
it.
Have a copy here, Dr. Jackson, but if you wish, Dr. Gillum will search through that and provide the answer. There are mechanisms provided for additional meetings. I'm not going to respond to all of your items because they're quite lengthy, and I do want to respond to the only major item that I can see as a concern, because you yourself have said that some of these are procedural. We realize that this constitution has to be approved not only by the Senate, but when we bring it to the Senate, we also realize that there was a process to get to the Senate that went through a number of committees. So respectfully, we think that presenting it to the Senate is inclusive of the entire governance process that led up to its presentation at this body. There seems to be, Dr. Jackson, please help me with this, a continued concern on your part about the reporting structure of committees. The faculty make recommendations for action. They are the sole arbiters of what happens with the action. They then turn it over to associate deans for implementation. Frankly, the School of Medicine, through its own faculty, believes that this is the most effective way to govern the School of Medicine. And I personally believe that that is a correct path to take. I also wish to explain to everyone why these recommendations are appointed to associate deans and not to the assembly. The reason for this is the associate deans are in a position to advise the committees if, in fact, any of the committees has made a recommendation that would impact another area outside of its domain. I'll give you an example of that. Suppose a curriculum committee decides it wishes to add a course to the mandated curriculum. That has an impact on student affairs. So although they may make a recommendation, it's only an associate dean who could say, what's the impact on contact hours with students, realizing that we cannot exceed a certain number of contact hours, and what would happen? They might go back to the curriculum committee and say, you've exceeded the number of contact hours. Please reconsider. We don't see that there is any conflict with faculty governance. The faculty are making the decisions. Schools of medicine are complex, and it's the roles of the associate deans who keep up with accreditation standards to advise the faculty on how to keep within the lines. Faculty make the decisions. The school implements their recommendations. That is our position.
Well, with all due respect to your position, it seems to me that the faculty assembly of the School of Medicine is the body that should have the ultimate authority to make some of these approvals.
Dr. Jackson?
Excuse me, I was not finished. And if the committees are reporting to the faculty assembly, then any issues that are germane in terms of credit hours or other concerns, certainly these associate deans can be non-voting members of the committee and can bring those up. But that it means then that the faculty assembly of the School of Medicine is not the final body that is making approvals of some of these key matters. Now, maybe it's just a concern to me, but it is a concern, because it does not appear that the faculty assembly of the School of Medicine has the right to exercise all of the same level of authority that all other assemblies have on this campus.
Dr. Jackson, with all due respect, we disagree with your position. And I will give you another concrete position on why this takes place, and then I will call on Dr. B to explain to you further. Let's take the position of a student who comes before the School of Medicine for disciplinary action. Please understand that this has legal implications. If you wish to get the entire faculty assembly involved on taking a disciplinary action, this becomes a legal nightmare for the Oakland University's legal department because of need to know, confidentiality. It simply is unworkable. Now, what happens here is that recommendations are made by the committee, their reports are presented to the assembly. The assembly may decide to turn the report back and say, we wish you to do something else. But for the day-to-day running of the School of Medicine, we simply cannot wait for meetings to be called upon, nor is it proper, say in the case of a disciplinary action against a medical student, to have the entire assembly involved in taking action. But at this time, I would like to call upon Dr. B, who chaired this committee, to explain further.
Well, while she's coming, let me say, I don't know of any assembly where the faculty assembly interferes in matters of discipline. We have different procedures to handle those, and none of those come to any of our faculty assemblies.
Dr. Jackson, I'd like to call upon Dr. B to address this.
Hi. Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. B, and I chaired this committee. And we faculty were very concerned about that as well, too. So this is what we put into the document. And I believe this is under Article 4. The officers of the faculty assembly, so they're, I'll give you the verbiage first. The officers of the faculty assembly shall come from the faculty ranks and consist of a president, a vice president, and a secretary. None of these officers may be the dean or the executive vice president slash chief medical officer of Beaumont Hospitals. It continues on and on about the, you know, the term and that type of thing. So we have set forth and we have plans to have officers of the faculty assembly. So again, we will vote, faculty will vote on those positions. So there is faculty representation.
Thank you.
Yes.
I've got a question. I'm particularly concerned about Article 6, the faculty senate representation.
Yes.
If I read this correctly, half of the representatives, independent of the apportionment, will be from biomedical sciences and the others from Beaumont Hospital, at least currently.
Yes.
Okay. What that means, I believe, is that half of the representatives will neither be employees of Oakland, paid by Oakland, or have really any affiliation with Oakland other than through the School of Medicine. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And then I'm wondering why they should be members of the Senate.
Because the Senate passes policies that affect the School of Medicine. When we make a decision here, it affects all schools, it affects the college, and we believe that as faculty members who teach on this campus, not just in Beaumont Hospitals,
but
they come here and they teach.
Some of them can be teaching at Beaumont Hospital only, right?
Well, some of our faculty from Oakland University who are based in the Department of Biomedical Sciences teach at Oakland Hospitals. It works both ways.
Yes, but they are paid by Oakland and are...
Actually, it's not as clean cut as that. There are some clinicians and some faculty based at Beaumont who receive salary support from Oakland University. It is not as clear cut as to say there are two baskets. But they are part of the faculty assembly. The decisions of this Senate affect the School of Medicine. And to provide for governance, which means our faculty, all faculty combined, have a say in what happens, we believe that it is only fair in the governance model to include those members as eligible for election to the Senate with the apportionment rules that we have put into place. To exclude them would mean that if this Senate wished to take action that might be contrary to the School of Medicine's program, they would have the ability to speak before this body and to vote on those. We believe that that's part of governance and it's fair.
Dr. Polis, even I think it's a valid concern, but I think it might help you to think that the number of representatives is small enough that should not be a huge concern, because the number indicated, SBA, or whether you use a business school as a model, that representation is small. Of that, half is already Oakland faculty on campus, so I think that might help.
Well, I don't see why any number other than zero of people that are not affiliated with Oakland should be on our Senate.
No, they are affiliated with Oakland. They are not Oakland in your way getting the salary. They are big members of the school. That is
point of order.
School.
Is the chair participating in the debate?
Yeah. Dr. Russell. Yes.
I've got a few questions. I first want to make a couple of comments. I'm something wrong with my throat, so I hope you can hear me. Two of the strong features I liked in this new version, Francis doesn't like, and Mike doesn't like. I think it was an excellent idea to have faculty serving as the president and vice president of the faculty assembly rather than the dean. And I compliment the committee on that. And I urge everyone to support that idea of having the faculty chair that body. The other thing, I think it's a good idea to have up to three clinical faculty, which would be the maximum at the moment, out of the 49 faculty members on the Senate. Be clinicians for exactly the reasons Dean Fulberg's commented. There are, will be actions that apply to the clinical aspect of the medical school that's different than everything else we do, and we need to be have those people. My fear is that they won't show up for our meetings, but we need to have them here to point out activities like that. And months ago, when I met with Dean Gillum, I strongly supported her that some of the senators ought to be commissions, so we have that viewpoint represented. So I think those are strengths of this Constitution. I've got a few small points that I hope you can quickly address.
Yes.
You mentioned adjunct faculty. Are these part-time faculty or honorary? We use it both ways here.
To be honest with you, Dr. Russell, I've put adjunct in this Constitution to allow for the appointment of adjunct faculty. Our intention is there will probably not be adjunct faculty here. And if we do appoint them, our current thinking is that they will probably be honorific titles rather than salaried faculty. There are many, many ways that the School of Medicine can handle part-time faculty other than adjuncts. The reason the language is put in there is we don't want to keep coming back to the Senate for approval. It's a placeholder should we decide to ever use the title.
Okay. The Committee on Committees.
Yes.
That, how is that committee selected?
It is elected. It is elected. And I will tell you that schools, it sounds funny to have a committee on committees. But what happens here is where there's a chicken and egg that will have to be elected. It is our intention to elect as many of these committees as possible consistent with the timetable that we have. So, for example, applications really begin coming into the School of Medicine in a couple of weeks. The initial composition of the admissions committee may need to be appointed because we can't run elections by that time. That committee, and by the way, Dr. Russell, we're using a model that's used at many other medical schools, is elected. And then what happens is faculty members are nominated for committees. They will vet the nominations to make sure that people will come on time. In other words, do you have the commitment to really come to these committees? And then elections are held. It sounds like a silly committee. It's one of the most powerful committees in the School of Medicine's assembly.
I know the University of California system has a committee on committees for the entire system. My mentor at Berkeley was formerly a member of that committee, and it was an important committee for that entire system.
Yes.
There are some conflicts in here between instructors and serving on the Senate only for 2 years, but by eliminating those two classes, I think you've taken care of all those issues. If you care to let everyone vote, as long as it's only certain people that can serve as senators, I think that's your issue, and we shouldn't be concerned with that. I do think that this apportionate method will really require an amendment to the Senate Constitution. I think that limitation of how many senators are needs to be built into the Senate Constitution rather than just in your document, or where there could be some conflicts. So I would be prepared to support this document with your apportionment scheme if the steering committee were committed to submit as quickly as possible next year amendments to the Senate Constitution to make these two documents in agreement.
Dr. Russell, since you mentioned about steering committee, I will bring this to the attention of the steering committee.
I'm Jerry Gressman from the Department of Mathematics and Statistics. A couple things. I tend to agree with Dr. Russell and Dr. Fulberg that having clinical faculty in the Senate is a good idea. But I'm confused about the inclusion of visiting faculty because they are explicitly excluded by the Senate Constitution. The basic unit of the Senate Constitution is organized faculties and members of organized faculties.
No, they're not included.
I don't think they're included, Jerry.
They're not.
It says visiting faculty of all rank.
But only these two categories.
Dr. Grossman, if you look at the slide here, and I'm so sorry, I must apologize to the group. I'm a Mac-centric person. This was created in Keynote and then ported out to PowerPoint, and we lost the labeling here, and I didn't check that. This is, if you look at the categories, this is one, this is two. And the clinical business, which starts over here, is three. These people in category three are excluded. The only people who can appear are in category one and two. My tremor tells you why I'm not a surgeon, why I'm a pathologist.
They're excluded from Senate, correct, from being a senator.
They are excluded here in the apportionment.
Right.
They're included in the apportionment.
In the apportionment and excluded. Wait, they're.
No. You're right, Jerry.
They're not excluded from being a senator.
That's correct.
They are excluded from the apportionment.
But that isn't the issue I have. Mm-hmm. I have an issue with them being a member of the university. Nice. Because according to the Senate Constitution, the basic unit at the university is organized faculty, and the Senate Constitution says the member of an organized faculty shall refer to all professors, associate professors, and assistant professors other than those on visiting status, and some others. So the Senate Constitution explicitly rules out visitors, and your Constitution explicitly includes visitors as members of the faculty. And that seems to be a conflict that they can't seem to coexist.
Well, let me ask a procedural question at this particular point. We appreciate your calling this to our attention. This constitution was reviewed very, very carefully by members of the steering committee who did not point that out to us. The School of Medicine has no objections to amending its constitution on the spot to exclude those so that we are in consonance. We really do not wish to burden this body with making unnecessary revisions. We do want them convergent and consistent. And so we would be willing to strike that language to make them consistent. And I'd like to propose that we could accomplish that at this meeting.
Thank you. Dr. Russell, you had a comment?
Wait a minute. What the hell are they doing?
Yeah, the Senate Constitution excludes instructors with less than 2 years here, visitors, adjunct, and part-time. And I think the Senate Constitution would limit who you can send here. Right, and it would be nice to have your constitution in agreement with it. I thought you were extending the one and two, not just for the apportionment, but also for who the senators were.
No.
And if you did that, then there'd be no problem at all.
That's exactly my objection.
Well, the senators, to be honest, the senators are including this. I will be really honest with you. We are happy to strike this out for the senator's eligibility for Senator 2. It would have been helpful to us to have this pointed out before we got to this point, but now that it's called to our attention, we're happy to strike that language out from the Constitution. I'll look to Dr. B for consent. We're okay with that since she represents our faculty. We would state then that we would amend the Constitution on the spot with Dr. B's consent to strike the offending language.
That shows how much the faculty has an input into this.
I check with the faculty. I can't speak for them. They're in the back there, and Dr. B is speaking for her faculty. Yeah.
Thank you.
Additional comments?
I believe we're going to find out where in the Constitution someone other than the dean can call for additional meetings of the Faculty Assembly. I don't see that language under the president of the Faculty Assembly, so if you can tell me where
Dr.
I can find
B.
that, I'd appreciate it.
Dr. Mary B.
That's actually not in the Constitution, but it is stated in the bylaws.
Are the bylaws here?
No, they are not. Our committee is still working on those. I can't pull it up now, but in the bylaws, it's working to say that at least 50 members or 40%, whichever is lesser, can make the decision that we will have a meeting. So upon that, a meeting will be held with or without the approval of the dean.
The bylaws are not subject to Senate approval?
I believe that is the process of the Senate, that the bylaws are not subject to Senate approval.
So
assumption, Dr. Tracy?
That is true, but in the past, bylaws have always been attached to the Constitution when presented, so that not voted on, so that the Senate sees the whole body of the Constitution.
Okay.
And that has been relayed many times to the School of Medicine.
I'd like to address the issue of the development of bylaws.
Okay.
The development of the bylaws and the first of all, I'd like to address this issue as it pertains to all new medical schools. There is a consortium of new medical schools. All of them are in the process of developing their bylaws. This is extremely complex. Because we are dealing with a very large faculty when you consider the entire body of this. And we could spend another couple of months and perhaps even a half year developing bylaws that have to be approved. And the question is, do we hold up the Constitution until this body can see those bylaws?
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Tracy.
No, but you could certainly show the bylaws as they now are And then when they are revised again, it's informational only. It is not to be voted on by the Senate. You present them 6 months from now, 10 months from now, 2 years later, whenever you make changes to the bylaws. But to be able to see them is important. I have seen them. I think I'm the only person, except for the School of Medicine, who's seen them. But they've got a lot of good information in it. It says how many people are on committees. It says what the responsibilities of the committees are. It says how long before they start being voted on, if not immediately, because early on there's some appointments being made. All of that's good information. And I really think a copy of that should have been attached. And
May I just, Dr. Tracy, with respect, had the School of Medicine known that it was the desire of this body to attach the draft of the bylaws, because we are telling you right now that it's going to take time for these bylaws to be fully developed and ratified. Had we known that you wished to see the draft, we would have circulated them and given them to you. We weren't told to present the draft to this body at this particular meeting.
That's not quite true, but let's not go into that. There's many emails that have said that. So let's not go into that.
Dr. Gillen, would you like to address that point?
With all due respect, I received an email yesterday asking for a copy of the bylaws. I'm confused because when I was appearing here before, it was about the Constitution. All of the agenda requests have been about the Constitution. I sent an email back yesterday saying I'm not sure I understand why the bylaws are needed. Are you referencing the Constitution? So I don't think the Constitution, I don't think the bylaws have been requested for presentation to this body until yesterday. And I apologize if I misunderstood. But I thought we were presenting the Constitution. I thought that's what all schools had presented. And the bylaws were not part of some of the presentations that I had seen before this body. If there's some variation, that could possibly be the case, because I've only been here 20 months.
Well, this points out to me, as a parliamentarian, a major issue. And that is, if we're going to allow constituent bodies to have bylaws, then we need to know what's in them. For example, if you're telling me that the right for the faculty to call for additional meetings of the faculty assembly is in the bylaws, I really think that needs to be in the Constitution. That is not something that the School of Medicine should be able to change on its own without coming back to the Senate. And therefore, we have stuff in the bylaws. We have no idea what it is, and we don't have any idea whether any of the things that are in the bylaws ought to, by our own belief, be in the Constitution. And so the issue of constituent bodies having bylaws that are not approved by this body, that the body may or may not see, I think is important. It is important to me that this issue of the faculty assembly having additional meetings being called by the faculty, not even the president of the faculty assembly of the School of Medicine can call for additional meetings according to the Constitution. I mean, I just think that this is an issue. And the Constitution only gives the dean the right to do this. They need you at the mic,
Dr.
so that
B,
they can pick
you
up
the
recording.
Please. Thank you.
I'd be happy to move to the paragraph that I mentioned with the 40% and the 50 to put that into the Constitution. I if that would help this, I think that would be fine. The faculty would agree.
I'd like to address a procedural matter. When we were requested to present the Constitution over a month ago, we presented the Constitution. At no time were we asked to present our bylaws. If the bylaws are now being requested, is this standard operating procedure when the Constitution is presented? I don't know the answer to that. And if that's something that we needed clarification on, I would propose that the Constitution be approved and that our bylaws be reviewed at a later date. That's all.
Well, apparently I'm the only one in the country who didn't know that constituent bodies had bylaws. And it wasn't until we were at a steering meeting and Ron Tracy mentioned that the School of Business had bylaws that I discovered constituent bodies had bylaws. That was a huge shock to me. I thought everybody had a constitution and that that document came here. Ron assured us that the bylaws, Ron assured us and the other members of the steering committee are present, that no one ever presents the Constitution without also presenting the bylaws, and that he had communicated that to the School of Medicine. And that was before yesterday. So I am stunned as I stand here that we don't have bylaws, but also as a parliamentarian, I question a constituent body having something not subject to the Constitution and being able to change it at will, and we have no idea what that is.
Additional comments, Dr. Russell.
I think had we been able to approve the minutes of this meeting, we would have seen in the minutes of the last meeting the comment from the provost requesting that the bylaws be available for us. That was my recollection of what happened at the last meeting. So I think the minutes probably will show that when we see them in September. But hopefully by then we'll have the bylaws. The other thing that surprises me is that when any other constitution has become before this body, we've been told that we cannot amend it on the floor.
That's right.
That we need to send it back to them.
Right.
That they can then amend it through their process and can bring it back to us. I do actually don't think that the School of Medicine faculty, maybe the faculty's small enough, they're all in the room, but I don't think that they probably can amend their constitution on the spot right now. So I think that we probably should request that they make the two changes I think that really need to be made is the inclusion of how to have faculty. I'd noticed that too, Francis, that there was no procedure in there to call other meetings and then to fix up the excluding the bottom few categories you had in that category and then to bring that back to the Senate for approval. Now, I don't know. We saw a presentation by, I think, Dr. Gillum last time of where the other new medical schools were in the process of approving their constitution. And we were much ahead of ones that had started a year ahead of us. So is there some critical need to approve the constitution today, or could you go back and make these changes in the normal process and present it at the first meeting in September?
I should like to direct that question to the Provost Mughal.
Thank you. I think my recommendation would be something that is doable. I think there is no resistance to the suggestion made by various senators that they're willing to change it, make the amendments. In the interest that we have students coming in, the Senate and the university faculty have approved the school, I'd like to see them move forward with this firm commitment that these changes suggested by the body are made. And I cannot speak more than that. Obviously, I'm here to facilitate discussion. Dr. Russell.
There's a question for the parliamentarian. Can we not adjourn today's meeting but suspend action until a week from now or whatever it takes for them to amend their constitution and complete our meeting at a subsequent date?
I'm not as expert as Dr. Jackson is, but I would think so. Is that
Are you
true?
Talking about to fix the time for which to adjourn a week from now?
We've authorized another meeting.
On a beach in a little bikini.
We've authorized a meeting in the winter to occur this term for this agenda, right? Does that meeting have to take place in one calendar day, or can that meeting suspend action and be concluded in a different day?
No.
No.
You're either going to adjourn or you're going to recess. Recess is not more than 24 hours. If you're going to fix the time to which to adjourn, then you have to identify what the characteristics of that fix the time to which to adjourn are. You can't just say we're going to just go home and come back in a week.
When we approve a spring meeting to complete an agenda item, are we obligated to complete that in one day? I mean, we always have in the past, but this is an issue of a constitution that can't be done in a day.
I think if the question is, can we have another meeting in a week? and I think the senator should approve by its majority or three-fourths that we can have another meeting to make sure these all questions are addressed and the appropriate changes are made.
Well, I, with all due respect, Provost Milgood, I think that I'd ask the parliamentarian if there's not a provision in the Senate Constitution that says we do not amend the Constitution of a constituent body, that the constituent body has to come back and bring it back. I mean, we can't violate our own Constitution.
My understanding is that what happened 10 minutes ago was not that we amended their Constitution, but that they amended the Constitution being in the room.
May I please make a couple of observations? The School of Nursing came before the Senate in 1977 and 78. At that time, according to the documents that we have, the bylaws were not presented. I should like to also call to this body's attention that the School of Health Sciences Constitution was presented to this body on April 12, 2002. Its bylaws were not approved until April 13, 2007, 5 years later. And I should like to ask this body why the School of Medicine should be held to a standard different from other schools.
Did they have bylaws?
I'm sorry?
It was not my understanding. The
School of Nursing does not have any bylaws.
Well, then it doesn't have bylaws at all. I will withdraw that, and I want you to ask why the School of Medicine is being treated differently from the School of Health Sciences.
What, did they have bylaws at the time their constitution was passed, or did the bylaws develop 5 years later? That's the only question. I don't know.
I don't know, Dr. Tracy. I'm simply pointing out the fact. This is the first new school to come before this organization in two decades. It would seem to us in the School of Medicine that we are being held to a standard more strict than what has happened in the past. We have responded, please, Dr. Tracy. This school has responded to numerous written inquiries this spring from a number of Senate committees. We responded positively to all of them. We have come to a number of committee meetings repeatedly. Had we had known clearly everything that was expected of us that you're raising today, we would have accommodated this body completely. It is discouraging to me personally, I do not speak for the School of Medicine, to learn now that after working so hard with this body, with the University Committee, with all of its various subcommittees of the Senate, to learn that now we have additional information which we could clearly have provided, not a few days ago, a few months ago, when all of this process was being engineered through committees. I don't speak for the school, I speak personally. And please understand that after working so hard with this entire campus to bring a quality school and a quality constitution to learn on the day of its second reading, that's most distressing.
Didn't you have our Constitution available a long time ago?
We did, sir.
And how come you missed the fact that adjunct faculty and visiting faculty could not be members of the Senate? Obviously, you didn't read it as carefully as you perhaps should have.
You know, this went before a number of committees that looked at our Constitution, and that was not pointed out to us today until today. We are not experts. Doctor? We are not as expert, we are a new organization on this campus. You all have much greater knowledge of the Constitution of this Senate than we do. Had someone advised us, you all advised us on other issues, we accommodated every suggestion, as Dr. Russell has pointed out.
But this apportionment, frankly, I only saw this 2 days ago. I brought it up.
And there were other people who did look at it carefully and did not bring it up. Had they brought it up, we would have responded, as we clearly indicated today. So please understand where the School of Medicine comes from in trying to accommodate everyone here to be good citizens of this Senate and now to learn on the day of the second reading. Most discouraging.
Dr. Meehan.
Thank you. I sympathize with you in terms of your frustration because at the end of the last meeting, we did ask. I mean, we had the first reading, and there was very clearly some issues, and we did ask that, you know, the different Senate committees and the steering committee work together with the School of Medicine on this. And it just sounds like we're really missing each other once again. And I don't even know if we said, oh, we'll recess or adjourn and meet in 1 week, 2 weeks, or 2 months, if we're going to be coming back and hearing the same stuff again, or some version of it. So, you know, I understand the procedural problem here that item number 3 has to be eliminated, and they seem to have the faculty here and they want to do it. I think we should give them credit for getting their faculty together and trying to get input into this constitution. There's been some very good changes that they've made. So, you know, it's just very frustrating to hear this discussion yet again 1 month later. It's just the same version to me. It really is.
At your request, Senate Planning did meet with the School of Medicine representative. And I don't know if any of you have the report of Senate Planning.
I've read it.
When we left that meeting, with the understanding. In fact, Dr. Gillum said the School of Medicine has gotten the message about Senate representation. Only OU-paid faculty will qualify for the position of School of Medicine Senator. We get here today, and that's not true. I have not raised that issue as one of, you told us one thing at Senate Planning, and then we get here today, and there's another thing. If this is what they want to present, fine. But there are problems on both sides. What we were told at Senate Planning is not what we were presented with today. I think the other issue, quite frankly, is, I don't know about everyone else, but I didn't get the revised School of Medicine Constitution until yesterday.
Right, I downloaded it a couple days ago.
And I think
it's
the
not
frustration.
The one. It's not the one, that's true.
The frustration is if you get something the day before you're going to meet, perhaps if we had gotten it earlier, because Michael Polis did raise this issue, but you're talking about the day before the meeting. So the victimization of, you know, oh, poor us, you know, we didn't know. Well, then we need to get things earlier. You know, like most of you, I'm knee-deep in a number of other things. I didn't even see this until last night. So the day before the meeting, we get the revised School of Medicine Constitution, and then there's, well, you know, we've done everything. Well, no, you haven't done everything, number one. And number two, sending a document of this importance the day before we're to vote on it and expect us to be able to respond completely and address all issues is not rational. It's not a reasonable thing to ask.
Dr. Jackson, I'd like to respond to that respectfully. The committees here strung out this process with repeated meetings over and over and over again. This Constitution was rewritten. It was ratified. Frankly, we tried to make the deadline for this meeting as best as possible. If you received it yesterday or the day before yesterday, it's because we took the time to respond to every suggestion made to us and then subjected it to a ratification process, giving our faculty the adequate time. Had all the suggestions come in earlier, you would have received this a bit earlier. Please, the School of Medicine is not trying to deceive. It is not trying to play fast and loose with governance. I wish to point out to everyone that when we received suggestions from you, we addressed every one of them. If we had received those suggestions in time, they too would have been addressed. We have come here, and we've indicated that to you. We've shown it to you by our actions. And no, Dr. Jackson, I disagree with your assessment.
What a shock. Thank you. Dr. Studeman, Senator, please, you have a comment?
I would like to agree with Dr. Meehan that it's pretty much the same story as the last time we were here. And it seems to me that, again, I'm a student and I'm not really involved in day-to-day faculty governance and all of that. That's kind of way up here to me. But it seems like it's a blame game going back and forth. And it's some technicalities and things like that that need to be addressed, but they can't be addressed today because the Constitution's on the Senate floor. And the faculty assembly of the School of Medicine isn't in an official meeting right now, so they couldn't record minutes or technically vote anyway. I just feel like we're spinning our wheels. So with that, I'd respectfully motion to postpone this item under, or item one under old business to the September meeting. And that should give time for the steering committee and the School of Medicine and anyone else who's involved to be able to meet, to work out the kinks, and to have a good constitution ready for a second reading when we get back in the fall.
Second.
Discussion.
While I object, Charles Marks, School of Health Sciences, while I object to postponing this till September, I have no objections to waiting till maybe next month, but I think the Senate is obliged to moving on this as soon as possible.
Thank you. Dr. Tracy.
I would hope that rather than do this, postpone it, I would like to have us vote on it and ask the School of Medicine to come back in the fall with a revised constitution. That'll give them the ability to start admitting students that they have to do, and I think they're doing a rollover or something, I think I had heard, and give them the time to do it. I think part of the problem has been that there have been a huge number of suggestions, and I believe that what has happened is that in making many of the things, some others got missed, and that's fine. I understand all of that, but I don't think we should try to hold up the School of Medicine moving forward, and the idea of having another meeting 2 weeks from now is a bit bothersome given quorum and everything else, and we don't actually have quorum, but the lack of people showing up. So I would hope we vote down this motion, we vote on it, and then we ask them to please bring us a new constitution in September or October for a first reading that is clean and has the bylaws and everything attached. Thank you.
Parliamentary inquiry. If we adopt the current constitution, what on earth is the implication for having another constitution? I mean, what do we do when they bring this other one back? What we've adopted is what goes to the board.
Correct.
So what we adopt is what is in front of us, and it goes to the board as it is.
Correct.
I'm trying to understand from a parliamentary point of view, if they bring us something new, do we adopt that one too?
The new one presumably would be a revision, and we could adopt that at the time. What's being proposed by Dr. Tracy is that we sort of have good faith here, that we trust them to incorporate these things so that we can move on with it.
Layla?
Layla Gassis from Mechanical Engineering. I think I have to concur with Ron. We've had the faculty here. It sounds like they're willing to add some of the words in the statements into their constitution, that they're willing to remove the other visiting professor thing, and sort of, you know, use good faith that it will be in the meeting minutes. They've said that they want to change it, they were willing to do it on the floor. So, vote on it, and if they want to make revisions, bring it back in the fall. And
thank you. Do we vote on the amendment?
If there's, well, the motion on the floor is to postpone until September. Right. If the debate on that is over, then you're ready to vote on that motion to postpone.
And I was speaking against that motion.
Yes. Let me summarize. There was a motion to postpone, and senators have spoken against that. That we, for Dr. Tracy, that we not vote for that motion, but vote for another amendment that he has proposed, that we vote on the Constitution, and that a revised Constitution, if necessary, be brought during the fall semester with all requested information, including the bylaws. So this, according to him, does not hold the school from going forward. Jamie Han.
I thought what Ron said was September. Did you say September?
Right, right.
Not during the fall semester.
Right. No, September.
Right,
September, correct.
Just,
sorry.
Just to be clear.
Dr. Russell.
Some time ago, I asked Dean Folberg if there was a reason we need to do this now. Ron now provided some reasons. which I didn't hear before. You referred to the provost. It seems to me that we could approve this constitution pending the school's ratification of it by their approved procedures. I don't think they can ratify it today, yeah. Right? So we could depend, if they're willing to strike out the instructor bit and then take that back to their members for the proper approval procedure, we could have approved that constitution. If their members decide not to do that, then the constitution's not approved.
No.
We can't do that?
No.
That sounds like we're amending their constitution.
Yeah. But they've agreed. Well, you seem to say they could amend it on the spot. Is that true?
No.
I don't know what their procedures are.
All right, Dr. Russell and group. Dr. Russell and group. I'll speak for the School of Medicine. The majority of the faculty are here. I look to them. If what I'm about to say doesn't represent your point of view, please let me know. The School of Medicine would be grateful to this body if you would approve the Constitution and put in the minutes that you require us to come back at the September meeting with a revision to be considered. And we will abide by that requirement to appear again with a complete set of bylaws in place, probably that have been ratified by that time, okay, and a revised constitution that incorporates all of the suggestions.
That includes the FA being additional meetings in the Constitution?
Dr. Jackson, if that is what you desire and that's what the board desires, we will move that paragraph from the bylaws to the Constitution. Dr. B, do you sense that the faculty would have any objections to that? All right. So we will move that to the Constitution, and I believe that what the school would like to do then is to get the maximum amount of input from everyone, from Dr. Polis, from everyone concerned, to make sure that over the summer months we have incorporated everything that could possibly be incorporated so that the revised Constitution can be approved. But we would be grateful. We are starting admissions, and we would be grateful to this body for the approval of the existing constitution with the requirement that we come back in the fall with a revision.
Thank you. I think we need to move forward. We have comments are being repeated now. We got to move forward. The two motions are, one is to postpone, which has been challenged by some senators.
That's the only motion on the table.
That's the only motion
we need to do. Okay, we need to vote on the motion. Please indicate your approval, disapproval.
Aye.
The motion is defeated. And if you have no further question, I'd like to see that we call for the vote. Dr. Tracy.
Yeah.
I will. Fine, before you, if I may.
Yes.
In respect to the senators and the expressed views and an offer voluntarily by Dean Folberg, I would like to put in the minutes that all that was said is included in the minutes, and we take up on Dean Folberg's offer that this body sees a revised version with all the bylaws and any information requested at that time. Please.
That's all I wanted to make sure.
Thank you. I think we're ready to move on. Please indicate your approval for the Constitution as presented with the discussion in mind. It's coming back to you in a different form. Please indicate your approval by saying aye.
Aye.
Any noes?
No.
Any abstentions? It is approved. Thank you.
I think the noes need to be recorded.
Yes. How many noes? One, two?
The names of the noes.
Three.
The names of the noes.
And four. Dr. Lacha, a student, and Dr. Polis, and Dr. Jackson. Thank you. Let me move on to item number two, which is a motion from the steering committee to recommend approval of a new Doctor of Medicine program. Dean Folberg, we need you back again. First of all, there's a motion by Dr. Tracy. Bob, if you could wait for a minute.
Please. Move that the Senate recommend to the President and the Board of Trustees approval of a program leading to the Doctor of Medicine MD degree.
Second?
Second.
Second, thank you. Dr. Folberg, you may present.
We have no further presentations to make to this body given the amount of discussion and the time taken. We're grateful to you for your consideration. This brings to Oakland University a school of medicine that has received national attention. Other new medical schools, I will tell you, are visiting our campus and are beginning to model themselves after us. And I'd also like to speak to the Senate. We received a visit about 2 weeks ago from a brand new medical school, Rowan University, the Cooper School of Medicine at Rowan University. And one of the first things they asked us is, please explain to us how you handle governance issues, because now we need to do that with Rowan University. And I will also tell you, just in passing, Rowan University is an organized campus, and they wish to learn from us. So I would be grateful to you for your support in the presentation of the program to confer a Doctor of Medicine degree and MD degree at Oakland University. Thank you.
Any discussion? This issue had been discussed earlier during presentation. Any comments, discussion? If we are ready to vote, please indicate your approval by saying aye.
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 Any against? Abstentions? So approved. Thank you. We move on to item number 3, which is a motion from the steering committee to recommend approval of a new Bachelor of Arts in Liberal Studies program. Dr. Tracy, would you kindly make the move?
Move that the Senate recommend to the President and Board of Trustees approval of a program leading to the Bachelor of Arts in Liberal Studies.
Thank you. Second? Any second? Second.
Mark.
Thank you. Discussion. And is the representative, Dr. Moore? This is also second reading.
Yes, this is second reading, and I think we had a good discussion at the previous Senate meeting, and I think the only continuing issue is the disagreement about whether it duplicates in any way the BIS program. And the senators received Dean Sudol's communication yesterday, and I'm certainly willing to take any questions that people may have.
Questions, comments, then I have some from behalf of the Senate.
I'm just curious if the people in Bachelor of Integrated Studies.
Dr. Polis.
I'm just curious if the people that run the Bachelor of Integrated Studies agree with Dr. Sudol's interpretation.
No, I don't think they do.
I see.
Okay.
Other comments? Dr. Aubrey. May use the microphone.
I'm sorry, I don't have a question. When Dr. Moore is finished, I do have a statement that I'd like to give too.
Thank you. Dr. Moore, there was a question that I'd like to ask on behalf of the Senate. I think it has been addressed, or at least in personal conversation, but it's important for the Senate. One of the issues raised by the Senate was whether this could be an exclusively college program.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if you can comment on that.
We had originally been willing to have it be a more open program, but in response to concerns expressed by the BIS Council, we have essentially restricted it to a college program with rare exceptions, you know, depending upon student situation.
Thank you. That be noted. Thank you. Other comments and questions? Dr. Meehan.
I read the committee report, the attachments correctly. UQE did not pass this?
UQE was split on this.
They were
split on it,
but they didn't pass.
Right, but they didn't disapprove either.
Is the statement related to this? Your statement? Yes, Susan's statement. It's related to this. Perhaps maybe. I'd like some information. There's some controversy here, obviously, and you know, if you start reading through the documents, you know, there's some concerns. So I'd like to hear what the committees were, what their thought was, rather than after.
Dr. Aubrey.
Yes, thank you. I'd like really to do two things. First of all, there's been some discussion about what BIS is and isn't, so I'd like to do a brief statement on that. And secondly, I'd also like to briefly review the issues that arose at UQE and how the college has responded, if that's appropriate. First of all, the BIS program has been part of Oakland University for 35 years, starting in 1975 as BGS. In 1999, the NCA made recommendations to strengthen the then BGS program. These recommendations were implemented and became the foundation for the Bachelor of Integrative Studies. Program requires all applicants to provide a rationale for their interest in an integrative major, which is then reviewed for student selection. Also requires that they provide a planned program of study. Students are able to plan a degree that combines areas from more than one of the schools in the college to create majors that are currently not offered at Oakland University. BIS is an active and healthy program of approximately 300 students. The BIS student body has changed. It now includes students who have gone on to graduate school and also to medical school. The focus of BIS is integrative studies, which the Association for Integrative Studies defines as a process by which students connect knowledge and skills from multiple sources and experiences, apply knowledge and skills in varied settings, analyze diverse points of view, and understand issues contextually. BGS and then BIS took on the mission of serving non-traditional and transfer students, although the Senate legislation establishing the program does not prohibit a broader mission. The flexibility of the BIS program allows it to serve different functions. For example, OU is currently in discussion with Cooley Law School about using BIS as a platform to allow students to take minors in education, business, or the college, and to graduate with a bachelor's degree while decreasing the number of years that it takes them to get a law degree. OU has been an institutional member of the Association for Integrative Studies for 3 years, and Scott Crable has been nominated now to a position on their executive committee. The Association for Integrative Studies has also asked BIS and OU to consider hosting its 2012 national conference. Second area, putting on my hat as chair of UCUI, I'd like to review the conversations regarding the Bachelor of Liberal Studies. When the proposal came to UCUI, there were several questions. The committee was concerned to be sure that the program did not duplicate BIS and asked for changes in the proposal to provide that assurance. The college addressed many of these concerns in its revised proposal. Specifically, UCUI asked that a statement regarding minors and concentrations be changed to include that the BALS program requires two minors in the College of Arts and Sciences, since this is a liberal studies program, with a note that exceptions may be considered. The college agreed to that change. The committee requested that a statement be made that LBS 100 and 200 be taken prior to the student reaching junior standing, and the college made that change. UCUI asks that the proposal contain a clear statement that the target audience for the BALS program is first-year students, and that statement was included. UCUI also asks that a clear statement be made that the BALS program will not duplicate the Bachelor of Integrative Studies. This statement was included. The college did not include a student interest survey, nor did they address the concern that a request for 5 graduate students seemed to be more than the program warranted. But the changes that address duplication with BIS were included in the revised proposal.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Here.
Dr. Tracy.
Susan, if they made all those changes, why did UCUI not pass it then?
I believe that the other concerns were of concern to the committee members, and I think that there was discussion among the committee, and they just broke in the middle. It was pretty even split.
Thank you. Any other additional comments? Dr. Meehan.
So now the budget committee, they did not support this. Is there anybody from budget here to talk to us about that? I mean, I just want to, know. I'd like to know. I mean, this is very helpful because now we know.
Dr. Lacha.
I guess I have to dig back in my memory. What we had some specific questions
we were looking for, first of all, a statement from the dean saying that they, if the enrollment figures were not met, that the dean, that he would continue to financially support the program. That statement was never forthcoming. We also had questions about the number of graduate assistants, the enrollment numbers. We had significant problems with what looked like to be duplication between the Bachelor of Integrative Studies program. All of those things led to the committee not supporting the program. And that's basically it.
Dr. Lacha, have,
yes, sir,
have any of the concerns expressed by the budget committee been addressed in subsequent dialogue or conversations?
Provost Mudgill, I can speak to that.
Please.
After the first reading, I contacted our representative on the budget committee, Shay Howell, and asked her assistance in having further dialogue with the committee. She got back to me a couple of weeks after that, essentially saying that the committee had done its work and that they were not interested in revisiting it. So I think we're at a situation where we disagree with the committee's view. She stated to me, and this was all copied to the chair of the committee, that most central was their view that it was a duplication of the BIS program. And, of course, we strongly disagree with that.
We had received those updates.
Yes, sir.
We considered revisiting it. We decided that that was not going to be useful for our time.
Thank you. Any comments to that effect?
No. We all work in faculty governance and faculty review are used to diverse committee opinions.
Dr. Moore, the issues that were raised initially, and Dr. Aubrey addressed some of those, some of those concerns were addressed.
Correct.
Correct.
We did the major, we addressed the issues in the proposal that clearly state in many different ways, as Susan mentioned, that it is not duplicating BIS.
Thank you. Additional comments, thoughts? Dr. Sudol, you wish to make a comment?
Reluctantly, I'd rather not, but I think everything is premised on the idea that this is a duplication of BIS, which it clearly is not. These are belong in different precincts, as my statement says, and I'll let that speak for itself. But I do have some additional comments about the Budget Committee's response. We were very disappointed during the process that we were not allowed to speak to the Budget Committee. This has been a long tradition in the Senate and the Senate Standing Committees that when we've got programs and we have complex things to explain, that a representative from the program is invited and is able to engage in dialogue. And we were, despite repeated offers to do that, we were every time refused to do that. This is very complicated. We need to explain it. The other point about the Budget Committee is this program doesn't cost anything. It's built on existing programs, and nothing is added.
Faculty requests are coming?
No. Okay. No. Later on, but that would be those would be appointments within. There would not be faculty appointments in liberal studies. There would be faculty appointments in one of the departments of the college, so that a person would do that and run this program. But that would be that would depend on enrollments. That would be paid for by new enrollment.
Understood.
But the other point that has been brought up several times is the dean's written statement guaranteeing certain things, and I have steadfastly refused to do that. I was asked to do that in connection with the Master of Arts in Communication. Somehow that passed the Budget Committee unanimously without my statement. The reason I haven't done that, and I don't think any other dean would do that, is that we're not in a position to make any kind of guarantee like that. All new programs, and I think the Budget Committee should know this, new programs have a five-year grace period. They get 5 years in which to get their enrollment up. So the falling off of enrollment during the 5 years is of no consequence. In addition, nobody, not the dean nor the provost nor even the president, can really guarantee anything in a time of economic stress or at any other time. that when we pass programs, there's no guarantee. It simply means that the program is eligible for consideration of funding. In this case, there's nothing needed because it doesn't need to be funded. The courses, the faculty, everything is already in place. Both BIS and BALS are virtually cost-free programs.
Thank you. Dr. Meehan.
Thank you. My problem with this program, when you say it's cost-free, and I'm going to speak as a chair. I'm going to put my chair hat on. First of all, I noticed there was no chair in the college that wrote a letter of support for this, whereas for the program like the Master's in Communications, there was chair support. So one of the concerns, and this was raised by the Planning Committee, and I think it was right on, in the sense that the sort of consensus that's needed in terms of making a program like this work wasn't displayed in the original document.
That's right.
We are in agreement on this one. Yeah, there we go.
But Jay, the chairs as a group were in on this from the beginning.
We're told that we're developing this.
Right,
that's true.
Right,
but there's no letter from any chair that says we're on board, and that's a concern. Your own, the one letter from the person from UT, for example, says that it should have strong top-down support, which it does. It does. It's the question about what's the bottom-up support. And like the latitude we gave to the School of Medicine, I'm very willing to kind of listen to what are the sorts of guarantees that, knowing that there are no guarantees in life, I understand that, that, you know, maybe we can kind of speak to this issue about resources, because it's not free. I mean, as a chair, you're asking chairs to loan faculty in exchange for part-timers, for example. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, you know, and yeah, there may be an appointment down the line and the like, but, you know, what's in it for us, meaning chairs? And this is my chair hat. And I'm not pretending to speak for all chairs, but as a chair, I have that concern.
Dr. Sudol, then Dr. Lacha.
Let me just say a couple of things first. The college also already supports a master's in liberal studies program. And we went through that piece about liberal studies back in 2001. Okay, we looked at this as we're building on a program we already have. We had open discussions with the chairs at retreats, at chair meetings. There was no call by the college assembly for any chair support letters. There was no call by the Committee on Instruction. There was no call by the chairs as a group to say, you know. So I think we made the assumption that we're all in this together. And we had faculty members from diverse departments. I don't think there was anyone from your department, but from many other departments working on this.
There wasn't. And among the concentrations listed, I think my concentration in criminal justice is the largest of the concentrations that are listed.
Yes,
that's fine. We love interdisciplinary stuff, so I'm not speaking against it. I'm just listening for some other types of language on the floor of the Senate.
Okay. Ron.
Thank you. Dr. Sudol.
Well, I just wanted to reiterate that you know, we've been talking about this with the chairs group for 2.5 years, and it was discussed intensively over a 2-year period through two different rotations of membership on the Committee on Instruction of the College, and went through the assembly, which has 38 members of the college, including many chairs, and all of these issues were discussed, the question of resources and how things happen in the departments. And I think that I felt we had made a persuasive case that by bringing students into existing programs, as I said in my statement, all programs are enhanced because those numbers go to the credit of the departments offering the courses and the concentrations. But the question you're raising is internal to the college, and I believe we've already had that discussion in the college assembly.
Additional comments? Dr. Lacha.
Well, if I can respond to a couple of comments that have been made.
Please.
Of course, this program is not cost-free, as it's been pointed out by Professor Meehan, and can clearly be seen in the budget. Every other dean that we've asked all new programs that have come before the Senate Budget Committee, we've asked those deans to provide letters of support. Every single one, with the exception of Dean Sudol, has. In fact, you may recall in the discussion that we had with you and with John Behan,
right,
we asked if this was an unreasonable thing to ask, and Vice President Behan, in fact, said that such letters of support would be very valuable in terms of documentation. It's also been, this has been compared to the proposal of the master's program in communication. The master's program in communication had no other issues with it other than the fact that this letter of support was missing. That's why it passed. This has many more problems than just this missing letter of support.
Thank you. Thank you for the clarification.
Provost.
Dr. Jackson.
Yeah, Senate Planning was the only review committee that did approve this. And even if you look at the report from Senate Planning, it may not be clear why we did, because the number of questions and concerns we have is longer than the approval. One of the problems with not having a letter of support from Dean Sudol is that in almost every other situation, a new proposal is proposed by a department, and therefore there are expectations that the department chair, who provides the letter, will be responsible for garnering the resources. This proposal was not authored. I'm not saying there was not faculty input, but this proposal was not authored by a particular chair or even a specific faculty member. So where the support is going to come from is not clear. And in the absence of a letter of support from the dean, because this is not a free program, and as we pointed out, when you talk about taking full-time faculty and substituting them with part-time faculty, who among the college chairs are going to consider that to be a really good deal? And so we had more questions than we had answers, and we felt, in spite of the fact that we approved it, the issue of the dean's office essentially authoring a proposal for a new degree program was something that we were very concerned about, and then the dean refused to provide a letter.
Thank you. Dr. Moore, you have a response.
Yes. I would again point out that we shouldn't be reinventing the wheel. We went through a very similar process with the Master of Arts in Liberal Studies. It was brought through the Senate, through Senate Planning, by the Dean's Office. Mary Papazian, as Associate Dean, was the person responsible for moving that proposal through governance. Obviously, a college-wide proposal that has been approved by all of the college governance has the full support of the dean. And I think the College of Arts and Science has a very good track record of supporting its new programs, and we anticipate doing the same thing with this program.
Thank you. Additional comments, thoughts, responses? Are we ready to vote?
Call for division.
Okay. Please indicate your support if you approve this program by saying aye.
Aye.
Call for division.
He wants to show your hands.
I'm sorry.
Stand up. Division is you stand up.
If let me go through this. And those who oppose, please indicate no by saying, and please raise your hands. No, we need to count.
We actually need a roll call because the votes have to be recorded.
Roll call, okay. Thank you.
Susan Aubrey. Edith Chopin. Natalie Cole. Brian Connery. Mark Doman. Andrea Ice. Theo English.
No.
Bob Folberg.
Yes.
Frank Giblin.
Abstain.
Annie Gilson.
Abstain.
Kevin Grimm.
No.
Jerry Grossman.
Yes.
Leila Gassous. Jeff Insko. Francis Jackson.
No.
Bill Keen.
Yes.
John Kim.
No.
Mike Latcha.
No.
Todd Liebert.
No.
Tom Lamarb.
No.
Barbara Mabee.
Yes.
Charles Marks.
Yes.
Mark Meadow. Jay Meehan.
No.
Karen Miller.
Abstain.
Ken Mitten.
Yes.
Diane Norris. It's not here. Annette Osborne.
No.
Michelle Piskulich. Mike Polis.
No.
Joel Russell.
Yes.
Laura Shartman.
Yes.
Linda Schweitzer.
Yes.
Michelle Southward.
Yes.
Anna Spagnolo.
Yes.
Ron Sudol.
Yes.
Mohan Tanaru. It's gone. Ron Tracy.
No.
Julie Volk. Julie Walters.
Abstain.
And Karen Wells.
No.
I think it's 17-17.
Is there a bigger tension?
Tomorrow, Senator.
I do.
Senator?
Yes.
She needs to vote.
I'm abstaining.
You counting your vote one way or another?
I'm abstaining.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, she, okay. I think it's tied and you get to break the vote.
That's gonna go forward to the board. Even with the number, it's gonna go forward anyway. Is that what you got, 16-16.
Six. Did you get to tie
your approach? Yes, or no? Oh, boy.
Maybe a couple people thought of staying, but
you can change your vote.
People abstain.
Surprisingly.
Oh, yes. You know, take abstentions?
I suppose you could ask anybody if they want to change the vote.
I suppose you could.
I've got 16 yes, 16 no, and 8 abstention.
Motion fails.
It's up to you. You're a senator.
I support programs. I hope I'm voting to support a program, but with a clear indication that the group comes back to the Senate in September and address some of the issues raised on the Senate floor.
Is that going to include a letter of support from the dean?
I will work on that, yes. Okay,
you.
We move on. Item number 4, motion from the steering committee to recommend approval of a new Master of Science in Mechatronics program. Professor Miller will make the motion.
that the Senate recommend to the President and the Board of Trustees approval of a program leading to the Master of Science in Mechatronics.
Thank you. Second? Second. Thank you. Discussion. This program was presented by Dr. Das and his colleagues last time, and if you have additional thoughts, we welcome. Otherwise, we vote as a second reading. Hearing none, please indicate your approval for the program by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So approved. Thank you. We have a few comments to make before you do good and welfare. I'd like to first thank the Senate members, for their participation, for their very, very involvement discussion. And also, I think the process works. Whether we like a decision or not, the process works because everyone had a say to express it. I only hope those who are receiving this information take it seriously as a respect to a process, a governance process, and the Senate is only as effective as much as we respect it. So whatever we do, comments, whether we like them or not, whether the decision is in our favor or not, we pay attention. And hopefully this Senate becomes a stronger body. So I thank all the senators for their participation, expression of support or concerns, and that's why the system works, the process works. So I thank them. The steering committee had a very hard job in deciphering through systems and issues and present to you what we wanted to discuss. So I want to salute all the members of the steering committee for their leadership in this issue. Is Dr. Keene here in the audience? Bill, would you kindly stand, be recognized? This is his last meeting as a Dean of School of Education and Human Services, and I can't be more grateful to him for his leadership of the school and his very strong presence as a visionary on this Senate. Bill, thank you very much. Thank you. Diane Norris, is she here or did she leave? She left while we welcome her. I killed an insect. We welcome her in the new role she's adopted and wish Dr. Linda Thompson Adam, who is going to be a provost at another institution, a great promotion for her, well earned, and Diane Norris to step in her place. We thank them both. And you would not believe, but do believe me, how much work our Dr. Joshi does to make this Senate happen. So please thank her for my part. You know, she is such a stabilizing force. I'll walk into her room and she's going through all this, trying to put some face to it, what we need to discuss, what information we need, make some phone calls. She has done an invaluable service to this university and the Senate, and I thank her immensely. And please have a great summer, and we'll get back again. Thank you. And our parliamentarian, Jerry Grossman, please help me thank him.